part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
So we begin the interview then?
Yes.
All right. Gabe Chang is on the line at the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Gabe, this is your fifth time coming back. Last time I was like, it was your fourth time. Now it's your fifth. You are returning for the fifth time to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. What is wrong with you, sir? Why do you keep coming back for the punishment?
Why do you keep having me back, Christian?
That's Because I like you.
I like being on here.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. No, you're a very nice gentleman when we've met in person. You know, we've always, you know, at conventions and stuff, we chat for a little bit and things. And
yeah, are you going to WonderCon this
year? I am going to WonderCon, and I should mention that in the podcast, shouldn't I? Because this episode is going up the week before the Wednesday before WonderCon, and I will be at WonderCon at booth D59 in Artist's Alley. So you can come and check out my artwork and my little mini comic that I need to get the second issue out for, because I'm busy and, you know, not as productive as most of the people that I have on this podcast, but I'm working on it, people. I'm working on it, but I will have, you know, prints and postcards and stuff like that. But we're not here to talk about me, Gabe Chang. We're here to talk about you and your new Kickstarter, which I always like to talk about. It's a Kickstarter for, I'm going to screw this up, for Molly, right? Because I have to use the word for twice. For Molly. And you're doing a trade paperback, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Finally collecting all four issues of the comic into one trade paperback. And it's... very excited about it. Very proud of this book. It's also some revised and refreshed artwork from Ben Sawyer.
Nice.
Some things that he felt like he, specifically in the first issue, felt like he needed to refresh, because he feels like he kind of improved as an artist by the time we got to the fourth issue. So he went back and changed some things. Little details, you might not notice it unless you're looking at the side-by-side comparison, but it is, I am very happy with the changes that he made.
Oh, that's so funny, because, I mean, it really is true. I mean, even with my little mini comic that I look at it now and I'm like, oh man, I could have done so much better. So if I ever get to the point of where I finish the damn thing, you know, or collect it or anything, I'm definitely going to want to go back and redo pieces of art and things like that, which will make what I have at my booth a collector's item. So you should pick it up when you're at WonderCon. But that's great, because, you've been working on For Molly for a long time. And I mean, the last time I spoke with you, you were not planning on really like revisiting that universe. I mean, we met because you had done a spinoff of For Molly, and that was our first interview. And then, so how does it feel to be like revisiting the project after like, you know, several years?
It feels good. It has been about a year and a half since I did the final chapter number four Kickstarter.
Wow.
So it's been a while since I've revisited it. Ben was very busy, and I wanted to give him the opportunity to get some of his other projects out of the way. And then he did the refresh on the art. And so that was kind of the delay. And also I had other projects that I was working on that was taking up my attention. And so like Crashlands and, what was the other one that came out?
The problem with parallels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I know. And they're only short stories. Why is it hard for me to remember? but I have to like look behind me on the shelf. I had those projects that I wanted to get out into the world that I've been working on. So what has it been like to return to For Molly? It has been interesting. It's going back to kind of what you were saying about, you know, when you want to collect your comic and maybe redo some stuff. It wasn't just Ben that wanted to refresh some things. I changed some dialogue a little bit in the first issue as well, because I felt like I, I improved and I wanted to change things. And but looking back on it, it's my first comic. I'm very proud of it. It's my first time doing a Kickstarter, and it was very difficult, and I made a lot of mistakes and learned a lot of things. And it's definitely been a nice opportunity to reflect on how much I've grown, how much I've learned, and kind of what I want to do currently with projects that I'm working on for Kickstarter and for comics in general, and what I want to do in the next couple of years. And so it's been a good exercise in reflection.
Nice.
And it's been a good return to the story, but it is challenging, because it's also a story that's very personal. I wrote it when I was going through a divorce.
I didn't know that. You never told me that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's in the past, and it was.
Who would want to divorce you, Gabe? You're such a nice guy. Like, I'm so sorry to hear that. Okay.
Well, to full transparency, it was the other way around. I called it off. So.
All right. So, I will leave that alone, but I just, my sympathies for whatever you had to go through. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was it was a difficult couple of years in my life that I wrote the story and then turned it into a comic. I'm very proud of it. But it is a very emotional story, and it was an emotional time in my life that I was writing it. So to return to that,
yeah,
and start writing copy about it, and to start, putting that information out there again on the Kickstarter and in the video for the Kickstarter, and, you know, redoing social media posts for it. It does take a lot of energy to return to that.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was talking about, where the comics that I do in the future, I want to be able to have it be something that I'm very excited to talk to people about. For the example of my more recent ones, like Crashlands and The Problem with Parallels, they're sci-fi comedies, and they're based on my love of science fiction, and they're based on, you know, Problem with Parallels is based on my relationship with my siblings, and Crashlands is all about kind of the challenges of looking for a new job, which is what I was doing during 2020 and 2021. Mm. And those were interesting and different experiences. They weren't so invested in a very, emotional time in my life. And also they were comedy. So I was, excited to talk about kind of poking fun at those situations and the challenges that come up with that and the comedic situations that come up with that. And that's not to say that it's been a slog or, torturous to return to Formali. I still love this comic, and
we're here to sell it.
It's difficult. It's a difficult sell, and it always has been a difficult sell. And
really?
I had so many conversations at conventions. I haven't been to a convention since the pandemic, but I had so many conversations that I would say, like, hey, can I tell you about my comic? And somebody that'd come up to my table, and then I'd say, well, it's about a talking dog. And they'd say, ha, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not a comedy. So what is it? And selling it in that way, where it was, it's a modern fantasy adventure. It's dramatic. It starts off with the main character, getting a divorce, and it's about abandonment, and the dog was abandoned and escaped from the pound and things like that, or the shelter or whatever. And so it was a hard sell in that way, and it still is a hard sell, but it is. That is to say, I'm very proud of it, and. It is great to come back to it, because it's great to bring it all together.
Wow.
It is great to have it be in one place finally. And also the trade paperback is going to include Into the Wilderness, because that's the spin-off story.
Oh, nice.
And to have the full story all together, I think is it's momentous, really. It's really
important. I'm sure it is.
And
as someone who can't even complete a second issue in like 4 or 5 years, yes, that is momentous.
Yeah. I'm very happy. I'm very happy, and the Kickstarter is going well, so I'm very satisfied, and I hope people like it.
No, that's great. No, I mean, this is very interesting, and I should say, it is Saturday morning in Los Angeles, so there was some leaf blower action going on. I don't know if you heard that in the background, but hopefully I can edit that out. I just want anybody.
I did not hear.
Okay,
it.
Great. Yeah, so
there was also some Burbank Airport action on my side, right?
Well,
in
yeah.
The flight path.
So I mean, if you hear something in the background that I was not able to edit out, that's what it was. So I'm just addressing that right now. But so far, it seems like they have drifted away. But no, so I mean, this is interesting because we've, I just looked it up. I mean, we started chatting in 2021, so during the pandemic. And yes. I never kind of made the, I don't think, I mean, I know I read For Molly, and I know it was like a darker sort of book and stuff like that. But we never talked about like, you know, building off of your real life experience as like, you know, getting divorced and stuff like that. We would usually talk more about, you know, the plot and stuff like that. And you know, making the lead character like sort of the template for everything that's gone on for the past, whatever, 100 years in pop culture, which is white cis male, you know, and stuff like that. And,
yes.
But, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. And it's now that you mention it, it's funny because your last two projects have been very like lighthearted and, you know, like fantasy and like fun, like romps and stuff like that. And this is a much more sort of like darker universe, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It, like I said, it is, has informed kind of what I want to do, in future projects and how I want to, you know, what am I going to feel like I can authentically get out there and sell and talk about and do Kickstarters for, and kind of, you know, I hate this phrase, but like build up a brand.
Yeah.
And that is now gearing more towards genre humor. And so I still have some serious projects in the works. I also did a horror short story last year for an anthology called Monstrosities.
Oh, nice.
So I, you know, I definitely don't, I'm not saying that I'm never going to do another dramatic thing. I'm actually have another kind of dramatic sci-fi coming up this year.
Oh, cool.
But yeah. Oh, thank you. But it's, I think that, you know, my lane, where I really kind of want to start to gear more of my future projects to is sci-fi humor, fantasy humor. Because that's where I'm feeling like, I don't know. It's like,
well, you have a love for Futurama. That's the first thing that we've discussed.
And
many. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so, I was going to bring that up because my brother and I did a Futurama podcast and, it was,
what's it called again?
It is called Another Lousy Millennium.
Yeah.
Available wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. I really am proud of that podcast. I mean, we did all 147 episodes and the movies, and then we're going to come back and do the reboot show or the new seasons when those start to come out in the summer. And I'm very proud of that podcast and I don't know how bad this is going to make me sound, but I do go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Because it was a podcast that we got to a place after doing it for 4 or 5 years where we were really, my brother and I, making a podcast that we really loved. And it was a podcast that we ourselves would listen to. And I do listen to, even though it's us. And if it wasn't us, we'd still be listening to it. And so that's kind of where I want to be with my comics, where, you know, I feel like that's a good indicator, a good barometer, a good test of if you're doing something authentically, like if this wasn't you creating it, would you want to read it? Would you want to buy it? Would you feel as passionately about selling it to others and talking to other people about it?
Yeah.
And so that's, for me, like I said, it's not like I'm ruling out doing dramatic, dark, stuff in the future, but it's like, for me moving forward, what I'd really like is, more lighthearted, more comedic, fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
So that's the plan, for the next couple of things, for the next couple of projects.
Yeah.
And has been for the last two projects.
Yeah. But right now it's for Molly. So, I mean, is the Kickstarter up right now, or is it?
The Kickstarter is up right
now. Oh, okay. I did not know that.
The beginning of April.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Oh, okay. So it's going to the beginning of April. When's the end date?
April 5th.
Oh, wow. Wednesday. Oh yeah. That's right. You do these short Kickstarters. That's right. Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. That's awesome. That's great. I didn't even know that it was up yet. So I was thinking that it was going to go up like at this week at some point. So that's great. That's fantastic. Great. So everyone should go to Kickstarter and search for For Molly, and you should throw money to the project, because I've read, this book, and I think it's great. And a lot of, it's a very interesting concept, which we, almost 20 minutes into this podcast, have not talked about. And we're going on the assumption that everyone knows Gabe Cheng, and you may know Gabe Cheng, but, what is For Molly about, in case people don't know what it's about?
For Molly is about an antisocial talking dog named Molly, who is living alone in the New Jersey forest and helps a recently divorced outsider named Greg, rescue his sister from a hidden evil.
Nice.
It is about loyalty and abandonment and guilt and the bond that can only really form between a dog and a human, but in this case the dog can talk. And it's about the adventure that they go on together in the New Jersey forest, where there are off the grid living humans and feral packs of talking dogs and kind of everything in between, like dogs and humans that are working together, dogs that are very much against humans living in the forest, and the tenuous balance of peace between the two as it occurs at the moment, and things come along to upset that piece, and Greg and Molly get thrown right into the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it is an adventure story. It's a story that explores kind of a world hidden right under our noses amongst the abandoned things in the New Jersey forest. And it's a story about friendship and about family.
Yeah. 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 And it's almost like, from what I remember of it, it's very much kind of like, I don't want to say like it has a post-apocalyptic feel, but the world that they go into in the wilderness, it's different than our world, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit Mad Max, but in the forest.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit post-apocalyptic, but it exists in a world that is just hidden underneath ours, or hidden, like not like in a pocket universe or in that sort of sense, but it is ignored and not seen and lost in the trees and in the abandoned things in the forest.
That's the thing. You mentioned this a little earlier. You mentioned talking dogs, right? I mean, automatically people think like cartoon animals, but the dogs in For Molly are not like that, right? They are like our dogs, but they can speak, right? That was the difference. And the
line I had explaining that is, Greg, when he meets Molly for the first time, he says, I'd never met a talking dog before. And she responds, sure you have. They just didn't want to talk to you. So that's the kind of secret world in the New Jersey forest is that balance between talking dogs. And yeah, and it's not like Disney animation talking dogs. There's the main kind of antagonistic group of dogs is a pack that's run by a pack leader named Jetpack, who's an all black German Shepherd. And they're very antagonistic towards towards humans, and they kind of hunt, and they're very territorial, and they set traps and things like that. So to make sure that they are protected from human intervention.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's a very sort of unique and original story, and it's got a lot of heart, and it's not like the past two projects, like we mentioned. It's a bit more serious, but you know, there, I mean, it, like you said, it's a bit sort of like, you know, it's about friendship and loyalty and things like that. And I remember reading it and being like, this is very different than anything I've kind of read before. And just thinking like, how did you like come up with the idea of like the talking dogs and dogs only wanting to be able to talk to, you know, only being able to communicate, but only to who they want to, right? Because I mean, it's so interesting that we're talking about this, because yesterday, for some reason, I happened to come across an episode of 60 Minutes, and it was all about dogs. Like, it was literally all about dogs and the common genetic traits that dogs and humans have, and like the how wolves evolved into the, you know, common house dog and all this stuff, and how much research is being done for diseases that dogs get, because we humans and dogs, like the diseases that they get are so similar that the research that they're doing on dogs is actually helping humans. So
interesting.
Yeah. And it's just, so I was just like, oh, wow. Like, I should have emailed you a link to this episode before we talked, because I mean, I thought like, I was thinking like last night, I was like, oh wow, this is something that Gabe might find interesting, especially because of the subject matter of his book.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very interested in how, and I honestly don't know that much about it, and I've seen a couple of documentaries about
sure.
it, and I only retain so much information because of the holes in my brain, but I'm very interested in how dogs and humans were basically bred to be companions.
Yeah.
Or, you know, dogs were bred to go from being very independent and not needing human intervention to being very, like, you know, some of the best non-human companions that a human can have.
Yeah.
So that stuff fascinates me. I would say that the inspiration for having the talking dogs and for Molly was that I love a concept that looks similar to our world, but then changes one thing, and then we see the ripple effects of that change.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen a specific example, but it's like, it is a little bit like a horror movie or something, where there's a group of people that feel that the world is one way, and then they move into a haunted house, and suddenly they have to deal with the ghost, and then the ripple effects of that, something like that.
Sure.
Or, you know, a comedy example would be like the movie Ted with Mark Wahlberg.
Where it's like
you feel like there's one thing that changes, and that it's a boy's teddy bear is able to talk and grow up with him, and then the ripple effects of all of that. As a storytelling concept, as a premise, I really like that. So that was the main inspiration for it. And I am very interested in the challenge of, and it's the same challenge as it is with like romantic stories. The challenge of having two characters that are starting off the story and don't get along.
Yeah.
And then by 2/3 of the way through the story, they need each other. And then something happens where they are split apart. And they're that need and that relationship is challenged, and then getting them back together in the third act.
Oh wow!
Like, you know, that's romance stories. That's The Last of Us. You know.
Yeah, I have not finished it. Don't spoil it for me. Not done yet. I have to wait for my daughter to watch it together. So
it's a companion story. It's for Molly, where it's these two characters that don't necessarily like each other at the beginning when they first meet. And Molly is very abrasive and Greg is very he's very closed off because of his divorce. And then they get to a point where they need each other, where they're relying on each other to survive. And then it becomes not just a bond of necessity, but an emotional bond. And then something breaks them apart at the beginning of the third act. And then how do you get them back together? And that was the challenge of writing for Molly for me that I challenged myself to do, I should say.
Sure.
And that was an interesting challenge, one that I felt like I could take on, and one that I felt like I thought it was great when I first wrote it, and then looking back now, I'm like, I wish I'd changed a bunch of stuff, but it's fine. I still love the book.
I hope you love the book.
But just getting back to what we were saying earlier, it does feel like it's a book that I love very much, but. You know, there's always somebody will always go back and look at things and be like, oh, I should have changed this. I should have done this differently. But I'm
so you're pulling a George Lucas is what you're doing. You're going back and are you?
Yes, exactly. And
Han shot first, all that stuff. Like, are you?
Yeah, exactly. The Steven Spielberg changing all the shotguns to walkie-talkies.
No, terrible stuff.
I promise I won't do that because like I said, I'm very happy with the way the book turned out and I'm very proud of it. And I'm excited to share it.
Sure. So. Well, it sounds like you started creating this. I mean, this wasn't For Molly was not your first comic, right? It was something else,
no,
right?
No, it was.
Oh, was it? I thought it was a vampire thing or something, right? Like off the top of my head.
No, that was my first short story.
Oh.
Love at First Bite.
Love at First Bite. That's
was,
right.
And that
not
was
the
my,
George
yeah,
Hamilton movie.
Yes, yeah, exactly. No. And so Love at First Bite was my first short story comic. It was my first time working with Elisa Menegel, the artist who did Into the Wilderness. But For Molly was my first comic, my first time working with Ben, my first time working with an artist, period. And my first Kickstarter as well.
Oh, wow. And so, and during this time, it sounds like you were using this story or this project sort of as like a catharsis, or you were going through something different. You were going through the divorce
definitely.
At the same time, or was this a result of like the divorce? Like after you were done with it?
It was a result.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you started writing this as you were going through it or?
Yes. The
okay.
Script, yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
And then, but it wasn't until about a year and a half down the road that I turned it into a comic.
Oh, so. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, given that it's been several years since you've gone through what you had to go through in your life and now looking at it through a different lens, like, I mean, obviously you're still happy with the story and stuff, but it must have been hard to revisit. I mean, was there a point where you were like, do I really even just want to do a trade paperback? Can I just move on to something else? Like, what are your thoughts? What were your thoughts on revisiting something that was a result of a time in your life that must have been very difficult and painful?
It was, I feel like I was avoiding it for a while.
Okay.
For that reason, I think for that and a number of reasons, I felt compelled to do it.
Sure.
I felt like this is the way to end, to close the chapter, as it were, on For Molly, is to do the collected trade paperback. And I had always dreamed of having it be collected in one place, especially when, I wrote Into the Wilderness and that came out, where I was like, I really wanted to collect the whole story together.
Yeah.
And everything that I had written for this particular universe. So I felt compelled to do it. I felt like, and there wasn't a question in my mind of, was I going to do it? It was just, when was I going to do it?
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, I didn't necessarily want everything that I had put out there and everything that I'd done and everything that I'd bought on my website to just be For Molly.
Yeah.
So I think that it was important for me to take that time and do Love at First Bite and crash lands and the problem with parallels to diversify my portfolio a little bit, as it were. I'm glad that I did it the way that I did. I probably, you know, there's definitely an argument to be made, especially from people I've spoken to that are a little bit more Kickstarter savvy than I am, that like, if you do like to do the fourth issue, on Kickstarter, I probably should have like within 6 months, like done the Kickstarter for the trade paperback. Like as soon as that fourth issue was funded, like, okay, like now all the pages are done. Let's jump right into collecting it. I needed a bit of a break from it. I needed certainly the time to think about how I wanted to bring it all together.
Yeah.
It is, you know, it's a much bigger task than even I thought it was. Like, I'm still working on you know, the actual publishing logistics of it. I have it all pretty much set up, but I will be ready to go by the time the Kickstarter ends, but it's a little bit more than I thought it would be.
A little bit more, meaning the cost of it is a little bit more,
effort.
Okay.
Yeah. Effort. And making sure that, like, I really want to make sure that all the pages look right. It's like a, you know, the coloring and the sizing and the consistency of it, making sure all the margins are correct and things like that. And then making sure that, like, I'm putting all the additional things in there, cause it's going to be pretty much all of the character designs that Ben created for it are going to be available in the book.
Oh, nice.
Into the Wilderness, page design are actually, I think maybe I should include the character designs for Into the Wilderness. I think they're in there. Now that I think about it, there's a variant cover gallery. All the original covers are in there. Elisa did a variant cover specifically for the trade paperback. So I want to make sure that I know that there's thank you page, there's I'm writing an afterword. So I want to make sure that there's the right page flow in it, that all the pages that I create with all the additional content are consistent visually. Like, it's just logistical things like that, like boring things that I'm sure your listeners don't care about.
No, I mean, well, that's why people listen to podcasts like this, though. I mean, that is one of my questions, though, is like when you're going back and rewriting stuff and when your artist is kind of like redrawing stuff, how did the pacing change? Did anything significant change? Are these like, you know, like I was joking about earlier.
Nothing super significant.
Nothing?
No, nothing okay. super significant. There were... I feel like I used the S word a little bit too much in chapter one. So
okay.
There's a couple instances where that's taken out.
You pulled a Spielberg. You took the shotguns out. You gotcha.
Yeah. Now that I think of it that way, I guess I did.
Yeah.
There's that. And then there's a couple of spots where Ben, changed the way that Greg looked kind of early on to match more how he looks later in the later chapters.
Got it.
Because like I said, his style and his abilities kind of changed and improved over time. So he wanted to make some of those changes. To answer your original question, it's difficult to go back to it. But it has been a really good experience because I'm feeling like I am getting some closure on this period in my life. I feel like I am bringing the book together in the way that I think it looks great. I think the story, really works. You know, I mean, when I was communicating with Ben about the refresh art, he was saying like, hey, I'm going to fix this in chapter one, this in chapter two, this in chapter three. And then he was like, I want to fix some of the margins in chapter four. And he was like, look, I don't want to change anything. I think that this is really like, he said something like, I think that we made something really special here. And I definitely agreed. Cause I thought that like chapter four was really excellent work on his part. Had a good collaboration rhythm down by that time. And, I was very, I'm very happy with it. And to see it all come together has been a really great experience.
Yeah.
To see it all and to, you know, I'm just very excited about holding, you know, getting it together, holding my first collected trade paperback for the first time. Like I feel like I've been waiting for that moment since I started this back in 2018, I published a book. You know, it's, and in that way, it is kind of a lifelong dream where I've been writing my whole life. And on this kind of journey that I started with comics, it'll be a first. After 5 years of doing it, like, this will be the first time that I'll have a trade paperback. I'll have a graphic novel, you know,
sure.
At this point I hadn't, and, you know, I could say, spiritually, I've written a graphic novel because I've written a 4-part story, but like now it is a thing. It is something that I had an idea 5 or 6 years ago when I was going through this difficult time in my life. And now that idea is manifested and shaped and forged and printed and glued and stitched and I can hold it in my hand. I can put it in the mail and give it to somebody. I can place it into somebody's hand. Like it is a certain special kind of alchemy where, something goes from an idea that I had, you know, springing from a difficult time in my life to a physical object. And that's going to be a very special moment when I hold the book for the first time. And I'm very excited about that.
That's amazing. What is it about collecting it in a book though? As opposed to having it in a, separate pamphlet, you know, format. I mean, this is a discussion I've been having with guests throughout the years. Like, should the pamphlet disappear? Should it all just be graphic novels and stuff like that? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Why does collecting it in a book seem so special to you?
That's a really good question.
I ask really good questions on this podcast.
I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the podcast, where it is like we created a podcast that we ourselves would listen to, and it is the way that I consume comics is through trade paperbacks.
Yeah, me too at this point. Yeah.
And part of that is because of the ease of getting digital comics, because I read most of my digital comics through Hoopla, which I have a subscription for through the LA Public Library.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so that is the way that I consume comics, and the ways that I was kind of introduced to comics as well, where I'm kind of a latecomer to comics. I started reading when I was in college, and so the friends that would get me into it would recommend the collected trade paperback versions of books, or graphic novels that were already collected in trade paperbacks. So, I think that's part of it for me. It's the way that I consume it. So, to do something, to add my voice to that and to do that, I think is why I'm very excited about collecting it. And I think that there's definitely still value in collecting the floppies. And there's definitely still value in printing them and selling them at cons. And I need to set up a store on my website. I haven't done that yet, but, I think there's definitely value to it because there's something fun and consumable and kind of pulp fiction about, you know, holding just one part of a story, like, and just going through that and seeing, I don't know. I'm having a difficult time describing it, but it's like, having it, you know, the physical, like, this is just part 2 of 4. Like that's fun to me. But there's something that adds gravity to, like, this is the entire story. This is everything that the writer did for this universe, as is the case with Formali, like, in one place.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's that makes it fun for me too in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as much as I hate to say it though, for me and somebody who's been reading comics since like what, 10 years old or something like that, and never thought I would give up on floppies or like I'm like comics or comics and stuff like that. Like as I've gotten older and as the market has changed and as storytelling and comics has changed, I don't see like how floppies are going to survive unless they're, you know, being funded by something else. You know what I mean? Because yeah. You can't just keep paying $6 for, you know, and that's the thing is like, that's the dichotomy of it, right? Like everyone should get paid, right? The artist yeah. should get paid. I mean, that's a lot of work. Making a comic is a lot of work, especially if it's not your full-time job, right? It's like, yes, you know, they should get paid. Everyone should get paid what they deserve. But at the same time, yeah. it's like in the adult world that we live in and that I've grown up in, you know, I can't go every week to a shop, you know, as much as I want to. Like I go to my comic shop like every couple of months or once a month or yeah. something like that. And when I'm there, I will pick up a trade paperback because I used to do pull lists, but every comic shop I've been to, like you would miss an issue or something would get, and it's just like, you know what? I'll just wait. Like, cause now
yeah.
I've got 1, 2, 3 and I'm missing 4 and 5 and they pulled, you know what I mean? Like it's not just one comic shop. It happens all the time. And you're just like, oh crap. And you know what I mean? Or you forget. And then you're paying $200 when you go to the comic shop and you're like, oh, I forgot to pick up my books. But I mean, there's definitely a sea change that I think is happening in this industry. And as much as I love the little, you know, pamphlets and stuff there, I'm definitely like you where I'm just like, you know what? I'm just a trade guy, you know, and maybe I'm just so old and out of touch. It is called part-time fanboy that, you know, I don't see that there's still an industry for the pamphlets, you know, out there. But I hate to be a negative Nelly, but I can understand why putting it in a collected book for you would feel like, dun, 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 I finished it. I mean, that's one of the things that I've been dealing with my own project, right? Which is like, do I even do a second issue or should I wait years until like my whole story is done so everyone can see it yeah. and just put it in a book? You know, that's part of the thing that's been going on with me because it is expensive to make these like little pamphlets. And then it must be a pain to have to build a Kickstarter around it. And then it's like, oh, I got to get to issue 2. Oh, I got to get to issue yeah. 3. Oh, I got to get to issue 4. Okay, now I got to do the... You know what I'm saying? Now I got to do the trade and stuff like that all on your yeah. own. It must be very difficult, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's why I made the transition to doing short story one shots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
which
it's
I
like,
love all
it's
your short
one
story one shots. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. They're all, you know, we haven't mentioned it yet, but they, all the ones that I've done so far are also available in the Kickstarter for Fort Molly.
Oh, I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
So if, you know, if you're listening and maybe, you know, you're interested in any of the other things that I've done and that I've mentioned so far, it's available at Kickstarter, you know, search for Molly. Because it, going back to what you're saying, it's long form storytelling, it's long form selling, it's long form production and printing.
Yeah.
And to do a series as opposed to like one and done moving on to the next thing. I think that that's also a personality thing. Honestly, I've always felt like I'd rather work on something quickly and move on to the next thing than work on something. I can be more specific. I used to be a high school teacher.
Yeah.
And I was an art teacher. I taught art, video production, graphic design, yearbook, broadcast journalism.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Thank you. And I did it in project-based learning style. So I would set up a goal where the students need to create this by the end of this. 3 or 4, usually like 3 to 5 week period. And then you'd backwards plan all the steps that they would need in order to create that product at the very end of it. And then you'd move on.
Okay.
So instead of, you know, being something where it's one continuous thing all year, it is, a bunch of smaller things that are built, that are all still building on each other. But it is like, create a product, move on, moving on to the next thing, create a product, moving on to the next thing. And I always really liked that. I like that aspect of teaching, that it is, you know, if something isn't working, if something isn't clicking, or if something is just like the fundamental thing that you need to get on to in order to get to the next cool thing, it's like, well, we're in this project. We're going to get what we get out of this project, and then we're moving on to the next one. We're not stuck in this. We're not stuck learning the same thing, just in different directions or different ways or whatever.
Oh,
just
man.
Over and over
I really
again,
need to
years.
Learn a lot from you. I definitely need to learn a lot from you. No, I mean, that's great. I mean, those are some, and that's a great lesson to pass on to young people, because I know for me, like with my own story, it's just like stuck, you know, I just get stuck. And obviously, you know, like I said, we all have jobs, we all have lives and stuff like that. And, yeah, you know, kids, and some of us do, some of us don't, but you know, and some of us are able to do, you know, some people have 5 kids and they're doing like Kickstarters. I'm like, how are you able to do that? You know, but
it's very impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And I'm like, I don't know how you're able to do that. But I mean, for me, it's very interesting, because I was having this conversation with another comic creator. His name is Stephen Prince. He does a book called Monster Matador. I don't know if you've ever checked his stuff out, but I would recommend it.
I know Steve. We're good friends.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. He's awesome. But I was at Pasadena Comic Con, and I was like, you know, the thing of it is like, for me personally, I was like, I don't know if I'm cut out for like making comic books. Like, I like drawing. I like doing prints. I get an idea for like a superhero drawing or something, and then I get distracted, right? Like with comics, you need focus, or you just need to be able to accept what you've done and move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's funny, because this is another conversation that I've had with, and that's what I was saying. I was like, well, maybe if I do conventions, maybe I shouldn't have the pressure of making my comic. Maybe I can sell prints, and then when my comic is done, it's done. You know what I mean? And you know, like all those other things. But when you do a podcast like this, you're surrounded by ultra productive people who are doing like Kickstarters and working with publishers and stuff like that. So it feels very weird to be in that environment and still be like, hi, I'm still working on my piece of marble. You know, it's not going to be Michelangelo's David, but you know, it'll be something. Am I making any sense to you here?
No, yeah, 100%. And I think that like everybody is different. And there are some people that I have met that are perfectly content to work on the same story long form for years and years and have a bunch of, you know, a bunch of successful issues and collect multiple trade paperbacks or you know, do that, and then also be writing novels and getting those published and things like that. You know, it is definitely personality based, where I feel like my personality is more of, all right, let's do one thing and then move on to the next thing. Let's spend 6 months working on a short story and then let's get it out there and then let's move on to the next short story and keep it moving, as opposed to doing one issue of, which is how For Molly went. It was one issue, 1 year, essentially. And I think that, you know, you finding your groove and finding the way that you want to do it is, you know, it's definitely important, and it's based on your own personality and your own wants and your own capabilities, as far as, you know, you have a family, you have a day job, and you have the podcast. So it's, and so
the
yeah, that
podcast.
Would be I know, and I'm about to get back into podcasting when Futurama comes back. So
that's so great.
So we'll see. Hopefully my comic book production doesn't take a huge nosedive then too.
That's awesome. So. That's awesome. But I mean, beyond the because I mean, that's something that I've discussed with you on your other short projects, where it's like, you know, the problem with parallels and stuff like that, where I'm like, Gabe, like, this is like really good. Like, I want to see more of this.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you're like, yeah, I'm not going to go back to that. Yeah. You know, and, but I mean, at least with For Molly and because of what it sprang from and the difficulties that inspired it, I know you're proud of getting the book together, but are you also sort of at a point where it's like, thank goodness I can put this down and move on to something else now?
Yeah, it's 100%. It's both. It's very much like I'm very proud of this. I'm very excited to, you know, like get it together in a trade paperback for all the reasons we were saying. But like, For Molly is is my comic book past, and I have some things that I'm very excited about in my comic book future. It's both.
So what is your sort of next step on like a wider scale as far as publishing goes? I mean, are you looking at like kind of making your own imprint, like having your own? I mean, you said you haven't opened up your store on your site, which to me sounds like, wow, that you haven't done that yet? Like you've got all these, you know, these books laying around that are great, you know? Cause again, I wouldn't keep having you back if I didn't like your work, you know? But at the
thank you.
Yeah, of course. But at the same time, it's like, I'm like, does he want to create his own imprint, like his own printing thing? Like what are we, I mean, I seem to remember that some of the books do have like, it's like your logo or publishing like imprint, but are you like, you said develop your own brand. Is that the plan? Like to make it bigger, go larger with it, or just keep going how you're going and keep making stories and, you know, moving through genres and stuff like that?
I don't know if it's going to be even as big as that. I think that I'm definitely going, whenever I publish something on my own, it will have the Gabe Chan Comics logo on it.
Yeah.
You know, it will be part of that, that DBA that I've set up for myself.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's going to go really bigger than that, because I think that I would like to start to collaborate with publishers, and I'm having those conversations.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But I think that like for the immediate future, you know, the plans are getting Formali out there. And then I have another short story that I'm doing with Elisa, and then that will be a collection of the five short stories that I've done recently, because, you know, not to get too far ahead of it here, but like, I wrote five short stories during the 2020, 2021 year where, you know, it was the height of the pandemic, and I was also working part-time, and it was before I started my current job. And so I had all this time, so I wrote five short stories.
Yeah.
And the fifth of those short stories, so it was Love at First Bite, Into the Wilderness, The Problem with Parallels, Crashlands, and the fifth one, which Elisa and I are working on right now, which is called Stuck in the Middle. Stuck in the Middle will come out. The Kickstarter will be probably around this time next year. And then those five stories will be collected into a trade paperback.
Oh, nice. Are you going to call it like pandemic stories or something?
Well, like they all relate to how I was feeling at the during the pandemic, sure. But none of them address it directly.
Sure.
Like there is no pandemic in the story. So
yeah,
of course. Calling it like pandemic exclamation point. I mean, and then there's nothing of the sort in there would be a little bit, maybe false advertising.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it is, so that will be the next thing. And then I've got something else in the works that I'm not quite ready to announce just yet. It is sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about the order of what I want to do. It'll probably be sci-fi humor for a little while, for the next couple of years.
Well, that seems to be what you enjoy and what you're very good at. Cause I mean, Crashlands and The Problem with Parallels, I mean, obviously everything you've done is great, but those last two definitely were a lot of fun, you know, and had a lot of life to them. You know what I mean? You could see there was a lightness coming through the story. And again, you know, with both of them, I'm like, Gabe, what are you doing? There should be more of this, you know, which surprises me. I mean, that's the thing that has impressed me with you through the, you know, past several years that we've kind of gotten to talk on this podcast and see each other at conventions every once in a while and you know, chat and stuff, is that everything looks professional. Everything looks well together. Everything is fun. I mean, obviously Formali is a darker book, but like the last two projects and, you know, like you're doing good stuff and, you know, obviously you're out there and creating, but to me, it's not only your writing, but the packages that you're putting together, you know, it all is deserving of wider recognition, in my opinion, you know. And I don't know, you could be ready to sign something with Paramount. Like, I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, you know,
I wish
for me, it's very much like, yeah, this is a guy who has got his act together and knows how to put a really good package together. And, yeah. And I'm just always like, oh, okay, I want to support that. So I don't know what, I'm just building you up, I guess. But I guess.
No, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I will say that, like, you know, it's definitely luck as far as finding the right artist.
Okay.
You know,
well, you have to have an eye for that too. Yeah. Are. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I, but I mean, if Elisa, if I hadn't met Elisa, I don't know that, you know, all these books that, the short story ones, Love at First Bite, Into the Wilderness, Problem with Parallels, like, I don't know that they would be as great. And The Night Shift was the horror one that I did for the Monstrosities.
Oh, okay.
That was also Elisa.
Gotcha.
I don't know if they would have been as good as they are, 'cause she's just outstanding, incredible, and so great to work with. And same as Ben. I'm not saying that Ben isn't. And then
what, don't give Ben the short trip. Not in this exactly. interview. Yeah, yeah.
And then also, because Elisa and I were tied up with The Night Shift when I was doing that, and I wanted to do Crashlands at the same time, I met Julia Pratt, who is the artist for Crashlands, and she was just incredible, and she was a dream to work with as well. And she you know, she added, you know, I feel bad admitting this. Well, I mean, not Crashlands was a book that was written with Elisa in mind.
Okay.
I was like, okay, this is really going to play to Elisa's strengths. But then we got, we had the opportunity to do The Night Shift, which I was really glad I was able to do with her, because that was also a story that I wrote with Elisa in mind. And it's a horror story. She loves horror. And it was our first opportunity to do that together.
Oh, that's awesome.
But taking Crashlands to another person, was scary, because I was like, okay, I'm not going to find another Elisa. And, which is true that I didn't, but I found Julia, who is, she's not Elisa, but she's a great Julia.
You know, <she's, laughs> sure,
and
sure.
She knocked it out of the park for Crashlands and did just an excellent job. And I love that book so much. So I've been just so lucky with the artists that I worked with. And it was the same situation with Ben. It was definitely like, especially because he was my first artist on my first comic. He was so professional. He was so communicative, and so helpful and so patient. And like I said, we just had a great working relationship towards the end of it. And I'm so proud and happy and excited about the way that the book came out. So, I mean, you're talking about how it all looks great and it's all always, you know, put together in a great package. It's so much of it has to do with the luck that I've had with finding and working with great talented artists. I really appreciate it. As far as, you know, of course, everybody hopes that their books are going to be read by as many people as possible.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad to be doing successful Kickstarters. I'm glad to be even getting it out to the amount of people that I'm able to get it out to. And I'm glad to be, doing the variety of things that I'm able to do. Like I said, I mean, that's one of the other reasons why I want to do short stories and one shots, is because, I love, you know, I think I'm repeating myself at this point, but I love the fact that I'm, that it's different things and it's different characters and it's different situations and it's changing. It's always changing. And that's a fun challenge. And, it's a fun challenge in writing, and it's a gratifying experience when, you know, when I'm laying all my comics out in front of me and looking at the different things that I've done.
Do you do like Scrooge McDuck and like dive on the bed and roll around in them? Like,
you know, I really should, but also at the same time, that's my inventory.
Yeah. You got to keep them in mint condition.
Sell it to people.
Exactly.
So they don't want it necessarily wrinkled or like with like smudges on it.
Exactly. So, I mean, any final words on this? I mean, the only thing I could say is like, congratulations. And it's always great having you back on. And, you know, I mean, you know, I look forward to, I'm going to go to Kickstarter and, you know, throw you some, I mean, I've got the first four issues, but I'll throw you something to help out, you know, but I just,
thanks, man.
Yeah, I mean, any final thoughts? Where can people find you online? Your website, right?
Yes, website GabeChangComics.com, GABECHENG comics.com.
Yeah.
At Gabe Chang Comics on Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, still on Twitter, then, Gabe. Still on Twitter.
Yes,
I'm giving you the guilt trip.
Yeah. I know. I don't know why I'm doing it.
I know.
It definitely helped when I blocked a certain billionaire on it. so I'm not seeing tweets from that particular person.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure why I'm still on Twitter. Engage with me on Twitter and keep me there.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. I feel like, you know, I don't want to give the impression that to your listeners that like For Molly is just like some dark and depressing, you know, thing that I'm why can't I move past this horrible thing?
No.
It is a book that has a little bit for everybody. It's definitely dark in tone and in color palette. For the most part, it has its comedic moments. It has its emotional moments. It has a relationship between two of the two main characters that I felt like I feel very proud of. Like I said, I've been using that word a lot in this podcast because it's true. I'm very proud of the work that I did on this comic, and there are characters that I really genuinely love and care about, I'm excited to tell their story and to get it out to people, whether they are returning to For Molly or discovering it for the first time. It's got action and adventure. Like I said, it's got a little bit of humor. It's got a lot of heart. It's got big spectacle. And it is, you know, it's for anybody that really ever wanted to go on an adventure with a pet. And understands that bond that can form specifically between a human and a dog. That's really what it's about and who it's for. And, you know, if you're not, as a writer, you know, it is like, it's about falling in love with your characters. And there are plenty of times where I have started writing something and either realized, you know, I'm not in love with the character and what do I need to do to get there, or tried and abandoned it. But I genuinely love this book, and, I'm excited to share it.
That's awesome. I mean, it's a great book and you should be proud of it. And, you know, I mean, I've been impressed with all your stuff since the beginning, and you are a very nice gentleman as well. Are you going to WonderCon like at all? Are you going to like wander around, or like, are you going to the convention?
I have, for the third or fourth year in a row, I have not gotten it together as far as applying on time and getting a table, but I have a pass for Saturday, so I will be there, you know.
Awesome.
Walking around, buying stuff, talking to people.
By booth D59 in Artist Alley. That's where I'll be. I'm not just a podcaster. I like to draw as well and make art and stuff and struggle with my own comics. But Gabe Chang, I mean, it's always wonderful to have you on. People should go to Kickstarter, look for For Molly. This is a great project. I mean, if you love dogs, obviously, if you like stuff like Mad Max, if you like survivalist stuff, adventure stuff, I mean, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, you already got your final words in, Gabe. So thank you very much for coming onto the podcast once again. Five timer. I think we should give you a blazer or something. Maybe I should make a button or something. I don't know. But yeah, no, thank you so much for getting back in touch, and hopefully we'll see each other at WonderCon.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. And again, the book is For Molly. It is on Kickstarter now. My name is Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy. We are on Facebook and Instagram, not on Twitter anymore because of you, Elon. Because of you, you had to let the orange Cheeto back on, who might be getting arrested this week. I don't know. All right, no political stuff. Anyway, my name is Christian Horn, Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. Go to Kickstarter, support For Molly, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye. Part-Time Fanboy.